We'll move to question time, and I'll call Senator Cash.
Thank you. And my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. It has now been reported that a further detainee, a former ringleader of a child exploitation gang, released by your government from immigration detention, has been arrested in Dandenong amid allegations he has breached his reporting obligations and made contact with minors. It is reported that this man is a registered sex offender, previously alleged by police to have headed a prostitution ring which preyed on children in state care. A court was told how he once traded a pack of cigarettes for sex with a 13-year-old girl. You had 5 months of warning that the NZYQ case might not go your way, but when the orders were handed down, the only thing your government was ready to do was to release these detainees into the Australian community. Minister, why can't your government keep children safe?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Thanks, Senator Cash, for the question. I think she would know that everyone in this chamber wants our children kept safe. Everyone would. And I would also make there are a number of assertions in the question from Senator Cash. A number of assertions which were not correct. The first of those was a suggestion that somehow we wanted to release people into the community. She knows that we are not a government that can or will instruct public servants to act unlawfully. We argued against
Wong,
this case.
Please resume your seat. Order on my left. Order. Senator Rustin and Senator Cash. I should not have to call your name to get order in this chamber. You've asked your question. The minister has the right to respond in silence. Minister, please continue.
Unlike some, including the Shadow Attorney General, we know it is not open to a government.
Minister, please resume your seat. I think that was you, Senator O'Sullivan. I've just called the chamber to order. That applies to you. Minister Wong, please continue.
Unlike some, including the Shadow Attorney General, we know it is not open to a government to instruct public servants to act unlawfully. We do not instruct public servants to act unlawfully. But we have responded to the High Court's decision by legislating tough visa conditions, and we are working to finalise a preventative detention model. I would make the point that those opposite have yet to tell us that they will support a tougher regime, and have yet to tell us why they voted against the Greens, voted with the Greens to slow down the legislation to impose a tougher regime. So, Senator Cash, when you stop yelling at everybody, maybe you can stand up and explain to the gallery why you voted with the Greens to slow down a stronger regime to protect the community. Because if you don't,
has expired. Order across the chamber. That was incredibly disorderly and disrespectful. The minister is entitled to be heard in silence. I should not have to call senators repeatedly by their names. Senator Cash, please ask your first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Your government also made the decision to release a convicted sexual predator, once labelled by a judge as a danger to the Australian community and an ongoing risk to women. Yesterday, he was arrested and charged with indecently assaulting a woman in South Australia. What does the Prime Minister have to say to the alleged victim? And can you assure Australians that no one else will become a victim of crime perpetrated by any of the released detainees?
Thank you. Before I call the Minister, order. Order. Senator McGrath. Senator McKenzie. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Well, the first, again, assertion in Senator Cash's question is that this was a decision of the government. The release was a decision of the High Court. The release was a decision of the High Court of Australia. A decision against which the government argued. But as a government in this system, we are bound to observe
Senator
the
Cash.
Decisions of the High
Senator
Court.
Cash.
I would have thought somebody
Senator
who was
McGrath.
A lawyer and the Shadow Attorney General might respect the separation of powers. Having said that, it is our first priority to work to keep Australians safe. And unlike those opposite, who are only interested in fighting about this, we are interested in working to fix it. We are interested in working to fix it. And that is what we are doing. And I would remind those opposite about their inconsistency on this. First, they demanded tougher laws, then they voted with the Greens to oppose laws to keep the community safe. First, they said to slow down, and now they say to speed up. We've done more in 9 days than you've done in 9 years. We know what you're doing in this.
Senator Cash, second supplementary.
Minister, in light of these further revelations, will the Prime Minister show some strength and sack Ministers Giles and O'Neill, who created this situation through their own incompetence?
Order. Senator Watt. Senator Watt, order. Minister Wong.
Well, I again say that we've done more in 9 days than those opposite did in 9 years. An inconvenient truth, Madam President.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator McGrath, I've sat the minister down. I'm waiting for silence. Obviously, calling those senators on my left to order is having very little effect. I am the president. I'm asking you to be silent, and that is what you should do. Minister Wong.
Every single one of these 148 people arrived here before the election.
Right.
Every single one of these
Senator
people
Watt.
Was still here because Mr Dutton failed to do his job. Correct. The government inherited laws that the High Court has ruled unconstitutional, and we have worked around the clock to fix the mess we've inherited. President,
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Order. Senator Watt. Senator Watt. Senator Watt. Once again, order on my left. Minister Wong, please continue.
President, we've worked around the clock to fix the mess we've inherited. To ensure the opposition's support.
Order.
Senator
Cash, I'm really struggling here. I don't know which part of order you don't understand. You are being incredibly disrespectful and disorderly. You're sitting on the front bench of your party, and I would expect you to set an example, not encourage others to be calling out and being disrespectful. Minister Wong, please continue.
The opposition's support, we've offered them access to the relevant legal advice. You know what? They haven't made themselves available. Mr Tehan's been at the Jericho Cup races in Warrnambool. Senator Patterson is off visiting Harvard. Senator Cash is right here in the building. She's able to go up to Sky News, but she can't get
you.
To the minister's office.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Order. Order. Senator O'Sullivan. Senator O'Sullivan, it refers to a senator's attendance in the chamber. I don't believe Minister Wong referred to the senator's attend. Order on my right. Order on my right. It refers to whether a senator is present in the chamber or not, and it's not appropriate to refer to. Senator O'Sullivan, you are not in a debate with me. Senator Marielle Smith.
Thanks, President. My question is to the minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. In Ballarat, we've seen an abhorrent and deeply disturbing Nazi rally over the weekend. Can the minister please inform the Senate why these actions that seek to intimidate parts of the Australian community won't be tolerated?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and thank you to the senator for her question. Australia is privileged to have a rich multicultural society, and values of tolerance and respect are at the core of who we are. Australians fought and died in the fight against fascist ideologies, including Nazism, that are built on anti-Semitism and on prejudice. And extremist views like Nazism must be met with uncompromising condemnation. The Nazi rally at the weekend was appalling and unacceptable, and it has no place in Australia. And sadly, it comes at a time when we have seen an increase in anti-Semitism more broadly. Nazism, fascism cannot be normalised. They cannot be defended on grounds of freedom of speech because they inflict real and direct harm, and they are in direct opposition to liberal democracy. They are ideologies that work by dehumanising, by singling out people as outsiders, as second-class citizens, as not deserving the protections and dignities afforded to full members of the community. This is what the Nazis did. Nazism, fascism dehumanised Jews, gays, people with disabilities, Slavs, Roma, people of colour, as well as people of different political views, labelling whole groups of people as subhuman. And this reminds us again why hate speech is so dangerous. Hatred in speech led to hatred in deed. 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust, millions more declared subhuman, also killed by the Nazis. History shows that genocides, mass atrocities, systemic forms of enslavement and ill treatment have been fueled by hate speech which dehumanises and blames victims. Anyone who refuses to denounce Nazism or other extremist ideologies have not learnt the lessons of history. All of us must always stand against those whose rhetoric undermines our diversity, our tolerance and our values.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Marielle Smith, first supplementary.
Can the Minister explain to the Senate how the Albanese government is working to bring people together and make the community feel safe?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, Senator Smith. Well, everyone must be able to live their lives free from fear and intimidation. And the Albanese government has developed a package of support for Australian communities affected by the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. This includes a $25 million grant to the Executive Council of Australian Jewry to immediately improve safety at Jewish schools and preschools across Australia, and $25 million to Australian Palestinian, Muslim and other communities to support safety, security, mental health, cohesion and education objectives. We acted swiftly after the 7th of October attacks to make these commitments because all Australians deserve to live in a country that is peaceful, accepting and respectful. This is in addition to government investments that work to protect Australians from terrorist and violent extremist content online and targeted mental health and community support, including for students. The Albanese Labor government is working to protect and promote the safety and wellbeing of all Australians.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Marielle Smith, second supplementary.
Minister, what can leaders across Australian communities do to promote social cohesion at this difficult time? And why do all people in this place have a special responsibility to show leadership?
Minister Wong.
I've said before in this place, words matter. And the lessons of history is that words matter. Feelings and attitudes in our country are affected not only by events, but also by the words that leaders give them and that politicians use. Now, all of us in this place have a platform. We must use our platforms to bring our community together, not to inflame tensions. We should all be deeply concerned by the rise of anti-Semitism in the Australian community. We should denounce it and reject it utterly, just as we should all forms of racism and prejudice. So I would again urge, as I have many times since the conflict began, but also across many years, all in this place to articulate and defend the values and principles that underpin who we are and what we believe. Inclusion, acceptance, respect and equality. We must always choose unity, not division, respect, not prejudice, hope, not fear, and in doing so make Australia more united at home and stronger in the world.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Birmingham.
Thanks, President. President, my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Minister, both Senator Patterson in this place and the Leader of the Opposition quickly called for a preventative detention regime to be put in place to protect the Australian community since your government decided to release detainees, including pedophiles, rapists, murderers and a contract killer into the Australian community following the NZYQ case. Again, you had 5 months of warnings that this case might not go your way, but when the orders were handed down, the only thing the Albanese government was ready to do was to release detainees into the Australian community. It's now almost a month since the decision was handed down, and only this week, only this week is your government finally ready to introduce into the parliament the preventative detention regime called for by Mr Dutton. Why weren't you prepared earlier to take the most basic steps to protect the Australian community?
Minister Wong.
Thank you. And I again point out that the opposition, in their desperate attempt to make sure this is about them and the fight they want to win, asserts that the government decided. The government did not decide. The High Court decided. And I know that you wish. Words matter. I know that you wish to use words because you're trying to engage in a political attack. But the High Court decided, and it made a decision that was argued against by the government. The second point I'd make is that the assertion that the leader makes and that Senator Cash makes that this was all predictable. This is a 20-year precedent, and even privately across the chamber, those opposite expressed a view about the High Court decision that was the overturning of a 20-year precedent. So we all know, that the opposition is only interested in fighting about this. The government is focused on working to fix it. That is the difference between the two parties. And I again remind those opposite. That the High Court decision, the reasons for decision, which enabled us to properly draft a preventative detention regime, was handed down last week. We are still waiting for your support for that. We still note that you voted with the Greens against legislation to improve the stringency, to increase the safety that the legislation could provide to the Australian community. You still haven't explained to the Australian people why you do that, why you did that. We also know this. We also know this. We know that this legislation will come in.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Birmingham, first supplementary.
Mr. President, the lack of preparation by the Albanese government and the decisions made by Albanese government ministers have now seen crimes alleged to have been committed in the Australian community, including an alleged indecent assault and a registered sex offender making contact with minors. The Albanese government's failure to prepare for the High Court decision has turned a bad result into a catastrophic one. Why was there no preparation? Why were there no contingencies? Why couldn't your government make plans to keep Australians safe?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Minister Wong.
Thank you. First, in relation to an interjection previously made, I note that we have tabled the amendments which set out the preventative detention regime. Of course, you may not have made yourselves available to be briefed on them because Mr. Tehan is too busy being at the Jericho Cup in Warrnambool, and others are overseas. So I would make the point, we have tabled amendments. We look forward to your support. And we look forward to an explanation to all those here and beyond as to why you voted with the Greens against strengthening legislation to protect Australians. So when you come in here and talk to us about keeping Australians safe, let everyone remember that this is the group, this is the party that voted against strengthening the visa conditions and the criminal penalties associated with it, because they are always about the political fight. They are never actually about fixing the problem.
Senator Birmingham, second supplementary.
Minister, the government told the High Court that it was an agreed fact that as at 30 May 2023 there was, quote, no real prospect of NZYQ being removed from Australia in the reasonably foreseeable future. Did a minister sign off on a statement of agreed facts that was submitted to the High Court on May 30 this year? Did the government present inaccurate or potentially unreliable evidence to the court on this matter that weakened its case and helped to precipitate this disaster that has left Australians less safe than they were beforehand?
Thank you, Senator. I'm not going to call the minister until there's order across the chamber. Minister Wong.
Of the 148 people who arrived here before the election, can I make this point? Every single one of those people was still here because Mr Dutton failed to do his job. So you had 9 years to arrange resettlement and you didn't.
And, Mr. Wong,
and now you want to complain about the consequences of that.
Order. Order. Senator Scar, which part of order are you failing to understand? And Senator Mackenzie. Senator Shoebridge.
Oh, thanks, President. My question is to the
Senator Shoebridge. I don't believe the minister has finished. I have sat her down because this chamber is disorderly. Minister Wong, please continue.
Thank you, President. Well, the opposition says they want a preventative detention regime. Well, we have. Yes, you see, there's Senator Cash again. She's still trying to go in the political fight. Why don't you have a look at the amendments for the preventative detention regime, which is actually about Australians, keeping Australians safe, keeping
Order.
Australians safe, and make sure that you support it.
Because what we know is that you're always more
interested in a political fight than fixing the problem. We are working to fix the problem. I'm looking forward to you coming aboard, Senator Cash.
Senator Shoebridge.
Thanks very much, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Defence. Minister, RUAG Australia is the sole manufacturer of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter's weapons bay door uplocks. Without that military equipment, the F-35 fighter, currently being used by the Israeli military to bomb Gaza, would be denied its lethal capability as a weapon. Can the Minister please explain the government's position on providing this military equipment to Israel?
Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Thank you to Senator Shoebridge for the question. The advice I have is what the government has already made clear, that Australia has not supplied weapons to Israel since the conflict began and for at least the past 5 years. Pardon me. Australia has a stringent export control framework which ensures military and dual-use items are used responsibly outside of Australia in ways which do not violate human rights. I'm advised that Defence undertakes a rigorous assessment of each export application. I know in relation to these issues, the Senator has asked a number of questions. I'm advised that some of the reports deal with data that is collected by the Australian Border Force and compiled by the ABS. This data is based on information provided by companies about the type and estimated
Minister,
value
of goods.
Minister,
please resume your seat. Senator Shoebridge.
My point of order is on relevance. My question was very specific about the manufacture of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter Weapons Bay Door Uplocks by RUAG Australia.
And you've asked
the minister has not been relevant.
You've asked the minister for an explanation and the minister is giving... Senator Shoebridge, you're not in a debate with me. The minister is being relevant. Minister Wong?
I also wanted to indicate, in relation to the export control framework, which is relevant to the question which has been asked, my previous advice to Senator Shoebridge, which is the government introduced into Parliament in this session, the Defence Trade Controls Amendment Bill 2023, which is intended to strengthen Australia's export control framework and is reviewing the Defence Trade
Minister,
Controls...
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Shoebridge.
President, it's on relevance. The Minister is now talking about putative future legislation. My question was quite specific about RUAG Australia's manufacture of the weapons bay door uplocks for the F-35 fighters, and I'd ask you to bring the minister back to the question.
I believe the minister is being relevant, Senator Shoebridge, and I will continue to listen carefully to her answers.
Thank you, President. Well, if I can add something else, I will. I would make the point that this, I'm seeking to answer the question by looking to the legal framework which applies to the relevant export. I would have thought that's entirely relevant, Senator Shoebridge. I know you may not like it, but it is relevant. And with respect, a putative future bill, well, this is a bill that has been introduced. It reflects the government's desire or intention to strengthen our export controls framework and ensuring that the Defence Trade Controls Act 2012 remains effective, efficient and fit for purpose. I again reiterate the indication I have made earlier, as has the Deputy Prime Minister, in relation
to supply
weapons.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Shoebridge, first supplementary.
Minister, why won't you answer the question about the manufacture of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter's weapons bay door uplocks by Australia as the sole global manufacturer. Why won't you answer that question?
Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister Wong.
Senator, through you, President, I have answered the question, and I've said Australia has not supplied weapons to Israel since the conflict began and for at least the past 5 years, and then I have gone to the export control framework, which is in existence, and government plans to strengthen that framework. That is entirely relevant to the question that the Senator is asking. I know there's a lot of disinformation and misinformation circulating on social media and elsewhere about this issue, and I would encourage the Senator to make sure that he does not contribute to that.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Shoebridge, second supplementary.
Speaking to information and or disinformation, according to DFAT's own website, between 2017 and 2022, Australia exported over $13 million worth of, quote, arms and ammunition to Israel. Can you please explain how the government can export millions of dollars worth of arms and ammunition to Israel while you also claim to be sending no weapons to Israel?
Minister Wong.
It is really very irresponsible for a senator to suggest that a government department is engaging in misinformation and disinformation at this time. It really is irresponsible of you in this place to do that. You can disagree, but you know the way in which misinformation and disinformation is used in our society, particularly at this time, and you have a responsibility to use your platform in a more responsible way, Senator Shoebridge, than you do. I know that politics is a hard game, but really, you should use your platform a little more responsibly. I responded on that issue in my primary answer, where I explained. Would you,
Senator Shoebridge, you've asked your question. I'm asking you to listen respectfully. Minister, please continue. Minister.
Thank you. I answered that question in my primary answer, where I. Reference the fact that the advice I have is the data to which the Senator refers is collected by ABF and complied by the Australian Bureau of Statistics based on information provided by companies. And in declaring the type of goods they are exporting, companies select from a list of broad categories.
Has expired. Senator Walsh.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, Senator Watt. The Albanese government was elected on a platform of getting wages moving again after a decade of deliberately low wages under the Liberals and Nationals. What have been the results of the Albanese government's actions so far to get wages moving?
Thank you, Senator Walsh. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Walsh, who, as I've said before, like many on this chamber, has dedicated her life to working for working people, unlike those that we see on the opposition who dedicated their careers to keeping wages low. The Albanese government's number one priority is addressing inflation and cost of living pressures. And we know a lot of people are doing it tough in Australia right now, and that's why we're doing as much as we possibly can to assist. It's why we're delivering targeted relief while not adding to inflation. And that includes delivering electricity bill relief, opposed by the opposition, making medicines cheaper, opposed by the opposition, delivering cheaper childcare, opposed by the opposition, and importantly, ensuring wages rise for a decade, including for minimum wage and aged care workers. Unlike those opposite, the Albanese Labor government is also committed to helping Australians deal with the cost of living pressures through higher wages. We know, as I say, that a lot of people are doing it tough right now, and ensuring that people have higher wages is an important part of making sure that they can deal with cost of living pressures. Now, the facts don't suit the opposition because the facts show that wages are moving again under the Albanese Labor government. We've had two consecutive quarters of real wage growth. The latest wage growth data is at 4%. Under those opposite, it averaged just 2.1%, half the wage growth under the opposition that we are now seeing under the Albanese Labor government. And that's because of things like aged care workers receiving an historic 15% wage rise from the Fair Work Commission, supported by the Albanese government. We've seen increases to award wages under the opposition, 4.6% in 2022, under Labor, 5.75% in 2023. We've seen the gender pay gap reduced to the lowest it has ever been in Australian history, and meanwhile we still see unemployment remain at historic lows of 3.7%. We know people are doing it tough. We need to do
Thank
more,
you, Minister
but
Watt.
We're delivering
Senator
higher
Walsh,
wages
first
again.
Supplementary.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Minister. My constituents are telling me that wage increases are front of mind as they grapple with cost of living challenges. What have been the barriers to getting wages moving, and how is the Albanese government working to overcome them?
Minister Watt.
Well, Senator Walsh, literally the barriers to higher wage growth are looking at us in the face. There they are, every single one of them, looking at us, bemoaning the fact that Australians are getting higher wages again, including two consecutive quarters of real wage growth. We know that for those opposite, keeping wages below was a deliberate design feature for the entire time they were in office. Compare the approaches that the respective governments took to the annual wage review for Australia's lowest paid workers. Under the Albanese government, we said that the Fair Work Commission should ensure that our lowest paid workers do not go backwards. What did we see under the coalition? Not only did they say that low wages was a deliberate design feature, but there was a subheading in their submission on the minimum wage labelled the importance of low paid work. You know how important it was for low-paid workers? It was very important to make sure that they could get wage rises to deal with cost of living pressures. And while we know there's more to be done, the Albanese government is delivering those higher wages.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Walsh, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Minister. Low wages were a deliberate design feature of the Liberal and Nationals' economic architecture. Why is it important that working Australians have strong and secure wages?
Minister Walsh.
Thank you, President. Well, it is vital that Australians like those sitting in the public gallery today get the wages that they deserve and get the higher wages that they deserve and that enable them to deal with cost of living pressures. And that's why we're so pleased to have seen two consecutive quarters of real wage growth. Wages lifting above inflation. Now, we know that the job is not done. We know that Australians are dealing with cost of living pressures and more needs to be done. But what we also know on this side of the chamber is that higher wages are part of dealing with that. But it would appear that there are some members, at least on the opposite side, who still have yet to learn the lesson. Because we all heard Senator Hume yesterday interject saying that wage rises push up inflation too. Talking about saying the quiet bit out loud, what we now know from Senator Hume, the Shadow Finance Minister and the entire opposition, if they were ever re-elected to government, it would be back to low wages.
Order.
They still oppose low, higher wages. They still think that low wages are a deliberate design feature of their economic policy. And all those people in the gallery will be getting lower wages,
Minister,
if you ever get back into government.
Minister. Senator David Pocock.
Thank you, President. And to those in the gallery, it's not always this bad, but often is. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister of Infrastructure and Transport, Senator Watt. In August, the government said that you would complete an impact analysis and release details of your fuel efficiency standards before the end of this year. Given that we have less than three sitting days left and 3 weeks to Christmas, when can we expect to see the standards released?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Pocock. Senator McKenzie thinks it's such an excellent question that she never quite gets around to asking it herself. But that's because the Nationals never get a question in question time in the Senate anymore. Maybe Thursday the
Minister
last question
Watt,
might go to the
Minister
Nationals
Watt,
after Senator Lambie.
Minister Watt, but please resume your seat. Order. I will ask you to address yourself to Senator Pocock's question and to direct your comments to the chair. Minister Watt, please resume your seat. And no interjections from you. Thank you, Senator McKenzie. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. Well, Senator Pocock, you're right. The Albanese government is committed to delivering fuel efficiency standards, something that should have happened in Australia a very long time ago. And we have previously committed to delivering those standards as soon as possible. We did also say that we would take the time to get the design right. We hoped that it would be completed by the end of this year, but the reality is it is a complex matter and it may stretch into the new year, but we are firmly committed to getting this in place as quickly as we can. And for anyone who's wondering about why it hasn't been done yet, I again invite you to take a look at those opposite, because it was those opposite who, of course, their attitude to electric vehicles was that they would end the weekend. So for 10 years, we had no action whatsoever under the coalition to do anything about electric vehicles, anything about fuel efficiency standards. And what that has resulted in is Australia joining Russia as one of the only advanced economies without fuel efficiency standards. What an effort to congratulate yourselves on after 10 years of government being right in line with Russia in delivering no fuel efficiency standards, because you preferred to run around and run ridiculous campaigns about electric vehicles ending the weekend. But, Senator Pocock, I can assure you that this is something that the Albanese government takes seriously. We are committed to delivering those standards. But in the meantime, what we've done is get electric vehicle sales up, from 2% of new car sales when we came to office to almost 9% for the first three quarters of this year. And now more than two-thirds of the electric vehicles on Australia's roads today have been added under this government in only 18 months' period of time. We've made electric vehicles cheaper. We've got more public charges out in Australia. We're getting more choice into the market,
and
we'll be delivering fuel efficiency standards as well.
Answering has expired. Senator David Pocock, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Mr. Watt. You mentioned complexity. I'm interested why they're so complex that we have to wait so long. We've seen two tranches of IR legislation. We've seen other very complex legislation. Every other OECD country, bar Russia, who I think is currently suspended from the OECD, has these. Copy and pasting would be a good start. Why are we having to wait so long for these standards that were promised?
I'm just waiting, Minister, for Senator McKenzie once again to stop her interjections, which are disorderly. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. And President, I can understand why Senator McKenzie needs to interject so much, because she's so embarrassed about the fact that in 10 years of coalition government, we didn't see any movement on these issues.
I am going to draw you to Senator Pocock's question. Thank you. Senator Henderson.
President, I of course respect your ruling. The question of course was, why has it taken so long to deliver these fuel efficiency standards? And the reality is that not only is this a complex matter, but as in so many areas affecting climate policy and right across the policy spectrum, we saw a complete blank slate in this picture when we came to office, because we were run for 10 years by a group of people who thought that electric vehicle— actually, they didn't think that electric vehicles would end the weekend. They just went out and said that to try and scare people off. But we've actually grabbed the ball and we're running with it by doing the hard work that's necessary to deliver these fuel efficiency standards. And that is why, in the meantime, as I say—
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Lambie.
Thank you, Madam President. I think part of that question was he just wants to know whether or not it's coming up before Christmas time.
Senator Lambie, that's not helpful. Minister Watt, please continue.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Senator Lambie. Actually, in my first answer, I made the point that it was going to stretch into the new year, because it is a big job. It is something that we want to get right. But in the meantime...
Senator Pocock, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, too many of the people that we represent are grappling with a cost of living crisis. And recent analysis from the Climate and Electric Vehicle Council shows that Australians could individually save up to $1,200 per year or $10,000 over the vehicle's lifetime on running costs with strong fuel efficiency standards. When will we actually get these standards? You're saying the new year now? You'd said December. What do we say to Australians when they ask?
Thank you, Senator Pocock. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Pocock. And as I've already indicated in answer to a different question, we absolutely understand that cost of living pressures is the number one issue facing Australians right now. And I also agree with your view that delivering lower emission vehicles, electric vehicles, is an important way of assisting Australians to deal with what are otherwise petrol price rises that we see all too regularly. We are working on the fuel efficiency standards, but I reiterate the point that's not the only thing we're doing. We've already got electric vehicle sales up. I gave you the figures, from 2% of new car sales when we came to office to almost 9% for the first three quarters of this year. We've made electric vehicles cheaper by cutting taxes on electric vehicles that can save up to $11,000 a year on a $50,000 electric vehicle. And leasing an electric vehicle like a Tesla Model 3 can now cost less month to month than leasing a similar petrol vehicle like a Mazda 3, as well as delivering more public charges. So after 10 years of doing nothing and rubbishing the idea, we're getting on with it.
Has expired. Senator Lambie.
My question is to the Minister representing the Minister of Defence. Library research on the number of starred officers in the Australian Defence Force, that is generals, admirals, air marshals and the like, demonstrates the Australian Defence Force has grown its senior command by an enormous amount over the last few decades. In the last decade, there has been an increase in starred officers despite a reduction in ships, aircraft and boots on the ground. Since 1983, the ratio of starred officers to enlisted personnel has increased by about 8 times. 40 years ago, there was one general for every 1,800-odd serving people. Now there is one for every 250. Minister, what benefit did the Australian Defence Force get from having so many senior officers?
Thank you, Senator Lambie. Minister Wong.
Senator Lambie, and thank you, President, for the question. And the general proposition is that... Oh, okay, that was not intended, actually. Sorry. the overarching proposition is that, obviously, the military over time has had to adapt and modernise to a very different operating environment to the one that you might have been referring to when the ratio was 1 to 1800. I am advised that over the last 3 years, Defence has experienced some 13% growth, representing an increase of 13 one-star, 15 two-star and 2 3-star officers in senior ADF appointments, driven by government outcomes and the need to maintain capability. Growth relating to government-directed outcomes includes support to the COVID-19 response, to national bushfire recovery, to Queensland floods, overseas operations, the nuclear-powered submarines program and the Defence Strategic Review. Other growth has supported the Inspector-General of the ADF Afghanistan Inquiry and the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide, the enhancement of space, cyber and intelligence functions and the enhancement of operational cooperation and interoperability. The brief I have says that Defence will obviously continue to review all aspects of the ADF to ensure it is able to deliver on government direction, is sustainable and fit for purpose. More broadly, obviously there remains an ongoing challenge in, and an imperative for recruitment into the ADF, which the Senator is well aware of, which the ADF is seeking to address.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Lambie, first supplementary.
Thank you. Minister, this morning we have seen further reports the Australian Defence Force has stuffed up another ship procurement. The $45 billion, that's right, $45 billion of taxpayers' money, Hunter-class frigate program is under fire yet again from the ANAO for being, and I quote, poor value for money, end quote. AUKUS is a multi-decade program set to cost 10 times the frigates. Minister, how can the Australian people possibly have any confidence that AUKUS won't be just another stuff-up?
Thank you, Senator Lambie. Minister Wong.
Well, what I would say first in relation to the Hunter class, and this is something, as the Senator knows, when in opposition I asked a lot of questions about that particular procurement, and it may well be that in hindsight Mr Pyne might have made a different decision than the one that he made. We came to government and we inherited this program. As you know, as a consequence of the Defence Strategic Review, the government commissioned a Navy Surface Fleet Review, which included the Hunter frigates. Obviously, the government will work methodically through the recommendations of that review, which was received in the last couple of months, and I think the Deputy Prime Minister has made clear that the government will respond formally in the earlier part of this year. More broadly, the point about defence procurement and its capability in doing that, we are very conscious of the importance of trying to continue
Minister,
to reform.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Lambie, second supplementary.
Thank you. Minister, despite the increased number of starred officers, the ADF continues to get no better at procurement and put our national security at risk. There is a long list of failures, from helicopters to submarines to ships and much more. Neither the Chief of Defence Force nor the Secretary, both lifelong bureaucrats in defence, have owned up to any of its failings or taken responsibility. The only consistent general these men have is general incompetence. Minister, why is the government swallowing everything the ADF gives it and not holding either the CDF or the Secretary to account?
Thank you, Senator Lambie. Minister Wong.
Senator, It is the case that there have in the past been procurement challenges. I don't agree with everything you've said, obviously, but they have been identified in a range of reports. It is obviously a very complex process, defence procurement, and I would say that what we are seeking to do is to try and ensure, in particular with AUKUS, with the establishment of the Australian Submarine Agency, that there is a dedicated entity that is focused single-mindedly on this enterprise. In your first supplementary, you correctly identified that the AUKUS undertaking is probably the largest procurement that a government has entered into. It is critical we get it right and that we learn from mistakes that were made in the past so that they are not repeated. Certainly, the government is very focused on working to ensure that occurs.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. With the consent of the chamber, I intend to go back to Senator Babette. Senator Babette, I apologise. You were not on my list. And I understand Senator Vann substituted you for his question, so my apologies. In future, if you think you're on the list, just stand and draw it to my attention, because it seemed everyone knew except me. So, Senator Babette.
Thank you, President. No issue there at all. Now, my question is for the Minister, representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Minister Wong. Minister, your government recently lodged a defence in a federal court to a claim brought by some Australians from the Torres Strait that the government had breached its duty of care to protect them from climate change, that boogeyman climate change. In your government's defence lodged with the court, government lawyers stated that Australia only contributes a very small proportion of global emissions and that it was not reasonably foreseeable that anyone would suffer loss or damage regardless of any action or inaction taken by Australia on climate change. Now, Minister, do you agree with the government's defence that Australia cannot change the climate? Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Wong.
What I believe is that climate change is affecting us, that climate change is real. I don't disagree with your joke about it as a bogeyman, and I think that the scientists and observed patterns of climate demonstrate that we do have a serious problem. I also believe that no one country can solve it on its own. That has always been my position. It's why Australia has always argued, in the governments in which I've been involved, we have always argued for an agreement, international agreement, which covered all major emitters, in which all countries participated, because no single country can solve it on its own. So, yes, Australia cannot solve climate change by ourselves, but equally, that should not be a reason for us to do nothing. If you don't accept the science, I understand you don't. I think you're wrong, but I understand you don't. If only for economic imperatives. I mean, we know that the world is moving to 84% of the global economy is moving to a net zero emissions by 2050 position. If we want our children and grandchildren to be able to thrive in a world where there is a premium for low carbon goods and services, where there is a premium for clean energy, then surely we want our country being able to export and produce those goods and services.
That's right. Senator Babette, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Look, Minister, Net Zero Australia recently found that moving to net zero would cost us around $7 to $9 trillion, a large amount of money. Now, if we can't impact the climate of the globe, why are you supporting a policy that's going to cost the average Aussie around $270,000 each? Why support this policy? It's madness.
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Wong.
I'm not sure what the modelling is to which you refer, and I think what is important to know, what is important to emphasise is that, as I recall, both parties of government have committed to net zero by 2050. At least those opposite did at some point. Secondly, this is about our economic prosperity as well as the need to do something about climate. And I again go back to the point I'm making. If you accept that the world is moving to place a premium on clean energy, on low carbon goods and services, then as one of the most emissions intensive economies in the world, it is sensible economic policy for us to be able to do better in that world. And that is what we are intending to do. And we are intending to make sure we can use the enormous clean energy resources we have for the benefit of all Australians.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Babette, second supplementary.
Minister, look, in your government's defence on the climate case, you said before every 1,000 gigatons of carbon emissions would only increase the temperature of the globe by around 0.63 degrees Celsius. On your numbers, even if Australia was to emit zero emissions from now until 2050, the temperature of the globe would change by just 0.768 degrees Celsius. Why are we imposing 270 grand on every Australian for, in effect, no impact on climate change? What about China? They are much bigger emitter than what we are. What about them?
The time for answering has expired. Minister Wong.
I again will go back to my primary answer. First, climate change can only be addressed and can only be dealt with by all countries of the world responding. And you ask, what about China? Of course. The new installed capacity of China, as well as many other countries, is a concern. It is a concern, which is why we need an international agreement of which we are part, which is why Paris and Glasgow and the UN conference and the parties to drive action by all countries is needed. That's the first point. The second point is, again, the economic imperative. We have done well as a country, and it has been a good thing that we have been able to utilise the fossil fuel resources that we have. But at some point, we have to be able to make our way in the world, prosper in the world, export to the world clean energy and goods and services which are low carbon, because the world will pay high prices for them over the decades to come. So there is an economic imperative as well as a climate change imperative.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Senator Grogan.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. The Albanese government is acutely aware of the cost of living challenges facing many Australians and has undertaken measures to relieve cost of living pressures while not adding to inflation. Can the minister inform the Senate of the Independent Reserve Bank's decision on interest rates today and what this decision means for Australians?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, President. I thank Senator Grogan for her question and her interest in the Australian economy and the impact that some of the inflation challenge is having on Australian households. Today, the Independent Reserve Bank board has decided to leave the cash rate unchanged at 4.35%. This is a welcome reprieve for millions of Australians, especially in the lead up to Christmas, when we know budgets are tight. This decision follows recent news that inflation had fallen further in the month of October to be 4.9%, substantially lower than the 6.1% it was when we were elected. So while inflation is moderating, it is still too high, and many Australians, and we understand this, are doing it tough. Inflation and cost of living are the biggest challenges facing Australians right now, and that's why it's been a real focus of the Albanese government. It's why we're rolling out the $23 billion in cost of living relief that's been carefully calibrated to make sure that it eases pressure on households but doesn't add to inflation. And in fact, on two of the measures in relation to childcare and our energy bill relief, actually put downward pressure on inflation, something that's been acknowledged by the ABS, who confirmed that our cost of living policies are putting downward pressure on inflation. Since coming to government, our economic plan has been focused on providing targeted cost of living relief, fixing the budget and investing in skills, housing and energy to lay the foundations for future growth. Our economic and fiscal strategy has been welcomed by credible organisations and commentators who have seen the decisions we've taken about showing spending restraint, returning significant revenue upgrades to the budget, delivering a surplus,
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Grogan, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. It is great to see inflation turn. And the government, I know, is delivering significant investments in cost of living relief, including the $23 billion package that you mentioned previously. Can you please provide an update on the government's recent initiatives to further support Australian households, particularly in health and housing?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, as I've updated the Chamber this week on the Medicare urgent care clinics, we're delivering on our cheaper medicines policy, which has seen the biggest price reduction in the 75-year history of the PBS. Australians have saved $200 million on more than 18 million cheaper medicines since the start of the year. There's also the work that we've been doing in housing with the National Housing Accord, which will invest in $350 million in additional federal funding to deliver 10,000 affordable rental homes over 5 years from 2024, matched by the states and territories. There's the funding we've provided through the Social Housing Accelerator, $3 billion through the new homes bonus, and really to address 10 years of complete failure from the former Commonwealth government in the housing space, which has led to some of the pressures that we're seeing today. With our electricity bill relief, cheaper childcare, cheaper medicines, I know those opposite don't like talking about cost of living pressures because they voted against them.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Grogan, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. The OECD last week recognised how the Albanese government's budget settings and cost of living measures are helping in the fight against inflation. While our economy is expected to slow over the coming year, the latest OECD report highlights that Australia faces challenging global circumstances from a position of strength with a resilient labour market and good prices for our exports. Can the minister detail how other independent assessments have backed the government's responsible approach to cost of living pressures?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, our strategy has been welcomed by a range of organisations, including the OECD, the IMF, Deloitte, Fitch and Westpac, as being an approach which is not adding to the inflation challenge, but indeed is putting downward pressure on it, as I've outlined in my first question. It's also important, of course, to know that we have created hundreds of thousands of new jobs. We've got unemployment rate with a three
order,
in front of it.
Order.
We've got the gender pay order. Gap at record lows, the participation rate at record high, business investment up, industrial disputes down.
Order.
We've got a surplus order. That we've delivered. We didn't just say we would do it. We actually delivered upon it. These are the decisions that we are taking and that prove that inflation has peaked. It is moderating. We're pleased to see this. There's more work to do, obviously. But we are absolutely determined to ensure that our decisions support and push downward pressure on inflation.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Chandler.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Overnight, the Israeli government raised the travel warning for Jewish citizens travelling to a number of countries, including Australia, to level 2, potential threat, referencing the increase in hostility to Israelis and Jewish citizens and recommending those staying in this country exercise increased precaution, a point that I note the minister didn't reference in response to a previous question today. Will the Prime Minister now accept the opposition leader's recommendation that National Cabinet identify and commit to practical measures to ensure the safety of Jewish Australians? Will the Prime Minister commit to seeking to secure a statement from tomorrow's National Cabinet in which the leaders of the Commonwealth and all states and territories confirm their support for Australia's Jewish community and condemn anti-Semitism in all its forms?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister Wong.
Well, I'd refer Senator Chandler to the first question I took from the government in this place, which was precisely about anti-Semitism. And it might be well for us all to remember that this is not an issue of partisanship. This is an issue of making sure from this place we send a very clear message that all forms of prejudice and discrimination are to be condemned, that we work always for acceptance, for respect and for unity. That we condemn prejudice wherever we see it. We condemn anti-Semitism, just as we condemn all forms of prejudice, including Islamophobia, prejudice against other groups in society, prejudice against people for who they are. I would note that Israel has taken a decision to raise its warnings for a number of countries. Australia is one of them, but those countries also include the United Kingdom, Germany, France and others. I will check and others, but I certainly know UK, Germany and France. Now, we obviously want Australia to be a welcoming place for all visitors. I think you would have heard in my first answer and in many other things we have said that there is no place for anti-Semitism in Australia, and we must make sure it does not find a foothold here. And I can certainly say that we will always denounce it and reject it utterly, just as we do all forms of racism and prejudice. So I would say to the Senator, I know Mr Dutton has made certain comments. I also see Senator Birmingham has made comments. This is not a partisan issue, and this is actually an issue on which we should stand united.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Chandler, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, at a level two threat, the Israeli government is recommending Israelis in Australia take action including shorten your stay to the bare minimum and avoid openly displaying signs of your Israeli identity. Minister, when was the last time the Israeli government formally and officially advised Jews and Israelis to hide their identity whilst in Australia?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister Wong.
What I would say is I never want anyone to have to hide who they are. I don't want anyone, a person of Jewish faith, to hide who they are. I don't want someone who's gay or trans to have to hide who they are. I don't want anyone who's Muslim to have to hide who they are. I don't want anyone in this country have to hide who they are in order to be safe, and I would hope, Senator Chandler, you would agree. I refer to my earlier answer.
Senator Chandler, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, does the Prime Minister accept any responsibility for the fact that, according to Israel's National Security Council, Jewish people are safer in Canada, the United States and New Zealand than they are in Australia?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister Wong.
We have been very clear and utterly unequivocal in our condemnation of anti-Semitism, of all prejudice. You have heard me here in this place and elsewhere over and over again talk about the need for unity, the need to ensure that the division, that the distress in our community, does not become anger, does not become hatred, and does not become violence. And I would welcome you making the same sorts of comments, Senator Chandler. I would, because there are views in this chamber which are very different. There are people in this chamber who have very strong views about the Palestinian communities. There are people in this chamber who have very strong views about Jewish communities. But we all need to stand against division.
Thank you, Minister. We all need to stand against division. The time for answering has expired. Senator Polly.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Industry and Science, Senator Farrell. Can the Minister outline what actions the Albanese Labor government is taking after a decade of failure to invest in Australian manufacturing and industry to ensure a future made in Australia by supporting industry to create more Australian jobs, and how the National Reconstruction Fund will be part of that effort?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Polly, for her question and ongoing interest in Australian manufacturing. Australians have a proud history of manufacturing. We make things and we do it well. And the Albanese government wants our nation to be a place that continues our great industrial heritage into the future. That's because, as all Australians know, Australian-made products means Australian-made jobs. Australian-made jobs in our suburbs and our regional areas. Secure, well-paid Australian-made jobs in thriving new industries. The Albanese Labor government believes in Australian jobs, which is why we back a future made in Australia, and we're delivering one by leveraging our nation's strengths. A key pillar of this approach has been establishing the National Reconstruction Fund, a $15 billion job creation platform which last week was officially opened for business. Last week, the government signed off on the Futures Investment Mandate, and now the independent National Reconstruction Fund Corporation can invest billions of dollars in boosting our economic competitiveness and building up our industrial muscle. The investment mandate sets out clear expectations from government, including the treatment of priority areas for investment, expected outcomes and rate of return. The National Reconstruction Fund is about backing Australian industry and business to invest in expanding their capacity, driving innovation and creating more jobs in communities. Australia can be a nation that makes things again, and the Albanese government is backing Australian industry, business and communities to make this happen.
Thank you, Senator Farrell. Senator Polly.
Thank you, Minister. How will the industry growth program work alongside the National Reconstruction Fund support Australian businesses to expand their businesses locally and create more Australian jobs, including through supporting commercialisation, innovation and growth?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Polly for her first supplementary question. Our government wants to work with small and medium businesses looking to grow, providing them with practical, concrete support. Last week, our $392 million industry growth program officially opened. SMEs can now apply for expert advice on getting their good ideas to market and expanding their companies, creating more jobs across Australia. Future rounds of the program will also deliver matched grant funding ranging from $50,000 to $5 million. We want a clear pathway for Australians with great ideas to turn their ideas into thriving businesses in Australia instead of moving overseas. And, President, our plan to back industry will do just that.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Polly, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Can the Minister outline how the comprehensive industry policies of the Albanese government, which are supporting Australian jobs and communities and jobs, compare to the past approaches of the last decade from those opposite?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Farrell.
President, and yes, I can, Senator Polly. A new report released just last week by Industry Innovation and Science Australia showed that this government inherited a shrinking proportion of mid-sized manufacturing businesses that are critical to the future of manufacturing in Australia. Those opposite had a decade to support Australian manufacturers, but they lacked any cohesive industry policy, producing some of the lowest manufacturing self-sufficiency levels in the OECD. But there's a better way forward. The Albanese government is backing Australian know-how, promoting Australian-made jobs and supporting Australian manufacturing.
Thank you, Minister. Minister Wong.
I ask the further questions we placed on notice.